Paper.
Welcome to episode 124 of Paper Talk, a series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the fields of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and I run Helen Hebert Studio, a hand papermaking studio in Colorado's Rocky Mountains, where I create artist books and installations. I also host the annual Redcliffe Paper Retreat and papermaking masterclasses here in the studio, and I run a membership program called The Paper Year online. Find out more at HelenHebertStudio.com. You can also find the show notes for this episode at HelenHebertStudio.com/podcast. Today, I'm talking with Megumi Inoue, a gift wrapping and packaging artist known for her sustainable wrapping designs and creative innovations. She encourages repurposing, utilizing everyday things around us, and using organic and recyclable items. She attributes her passion for gift wrapping to her Japanese heritage and the cultural values that underlie the meaning behind the art of giving. Her new book, The Soul of Gift Wrapping, features creative techniques for expressing gratitude, both literally and figuratively. Enjoy our conversation. Megumi Inoue, welcome to Paper Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. I'm so excited to talk about your book. And we were in touch because your book is published by Story, which has published several of my books. And we were in touch back when you were first working on it. And I happened to be at the Codex Book Fair. So we met in person briefly, chatted on Zoom. It's so nice to see you again. And your book is now out in the world. And I'm so excited to dive into that. But first, just tell me a little bit about growing up and any early influences of paper.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me thank you so much for welcoming me on your a podcast, and also for having met me earlier at that time, because it was in the midst of my writing my book. And to have you, who has been such an inspiration in your craft, to be able to say that you would come and meet me there was such a thoughtful thing that I wanted to acknowledge and say thank you for. And again, to have me here on your podcast. And you know, you talk about early influences of paper, and we discussed this a little bit before, but my connection to paper is really connected to a childhood memory. And it's all about love and care. And I think writing my book actually made me reflect on some of that in my childhood. But I write in the notes that I have wanted to write about my book, how expressions of love didn't come in the form of hugs and verbal communications in my Japanese family growing up. And that's a very common thing. I think there's different forms of expression, and it showed up in other ways. And I remember my mother, who actually made sandwiches for me, and they were actually works of art. And she made sure that the sandwiches were never soggy, and they were wrapped with wax paper protected from the elements. And the closing flap of the fold was always precisely folded into itself, so it won't fall apart. And I think that sort of speaks in summary to how love and folding paper were somewhat connected in my memory. And that sort of imparts, I think, a big part of writing the book, connecting paper and folding to love and care, and how I associate those two in my life.
Yeah. And the book is The Soul of Gift Wrapping, Creative Techniques for Expressing Gratitude Inspired by the Japanese Art of Giving. Mm-hmm. And you have a lovely another childhood memory that you start the book off with about your mother and kimonos. Do you want to just tell that briefly?
Yes. You know, I always thought that wrapping had something very special to it, and I never quite knew what that was. I just had a sense of it. But I think writing the book and reflecting on the book, which actually came through a sort of a meditation, actually, in a reflection of remembering my mother, who had received a kimono as a dowry from her mother, and she had but could never wear them here in the US, but she would always every summer wrap and unwrap them. And just a quick reading from the book, if I can, because this is kind of how I remember this. But I said, I vividly recall when I was a young girl, the feeling of a summer breeze and smell of mothballs as I watched my mother open a chest full of kimonos. Layers of washi rice paper encased the kimonos, and the undergarments were wrapped with an air of gentle confidence that seemed to say, you too are worthy of appreciation and love. And my mother's hands glided over the wrapping paper carefully before slowly untying the string. And she talked about the artisans of Japan who took thoughtful pride in the work to assure the protection of the kimonos. And I could almost feel their labor of love. And I think she, and I also reflect on how in the wrapping, with the utmost care and feelings of gratitude, she would always talk about how she could never repay her mother for all the sacrifices that she had made in her life, and how I had wanted to reflect on how watching this and reflecting on this memory sort of was, as I write in my book, my love for wrapping and packaging has its origins in this memory. And the journey of this book is rooted in unwrapping and sharing the hidden treasures within. So I just love this idea that, like I said, paper and folding and wrapping, unwrapping to me is associated with love and care. And that would impart, I think, the basis of writing my book. It became the foundation and the actual, the meaning for why I felt the book was meant to be written from that perspective.
Yeah. I just want to mention, while you were talking, I was thinking about early in my career, which is hand paper making was kind of one of the first ways I came to paper. And there was a wonderful exhibition at the Peabody Museum in Boston, and they brought over Japanese paper makers. And that was the first time I'd seen Japanese paper making. It's not something I specialize in myself. I do the Western tradition, which is, I don't know. I mean, they're both graceful, but the Japanese artisans were so graceful in the way they held their tools and dipped into the water. And it was almost like a dance, the motion of making the paper. And yeah, there's a wonderful appreciation for materials and gratitude and all of these things that are coming out in your book. It's wonderful. So yeah, I'd like you to talk a little bit. Well, let's talk first about how the book came about. Like you alluded to that. And so, yeah, how did it come to be?
Well, I know the book actually has this incredible, just sort of out of body, out of spirit, you know, beginning, because the American Craft Council actually had had featured me in their magazine. And during the process, John Spade, who was the contributing editor for the piece and who wrote the article, interviewed me and asked me some profound questions about the Japanese traditions that might have, you know, impacted or influenced my love for wrapping. And so it just like brought up different thoughts about that. And then at the same time, I think that I was following a writer, Beth Kempton, who wrote the foreword for my book, and she wrote a book on wabi-sabi. And I think that was a philosophy that I always have been drawn to, a way of thinking and a way of finding beauty and imperfections and things. So this sort of collided with her offering a book proposal class. And I wound up winning a place in her class. And she, and one of the ways that you had to enter the contest was to say, you know, why would you write, why do you need this class? And I said to her that, you know, I've always wanted to write about the art of wrapping and gift wrapping. And I knew that because she understood Japanese culture, that she would understand the deeper meanings behind that. And I just knew that there was something about it that I really wanted to articulate. And I thought that just the visual, and in my life, I always thought that there was something about wrapping that people didn't see, that I could feel. And I wanted to, and the actual art of it could never really fully do it justice. And it needed words, it needed a context, it needed to be, I think, fully explored and explained. And I think a way that a book can maybe only do to really deeply, you know, go into that. And so I said, that's what I would write about. And so the whole book proposal class was just trying to craft this idea. And I have such great, you know, gratitude for Beth, because her way of approach to the proposal and to this process of writing was to really go really deep within. And she had a meditation exercise in the class where she encouraged us to go through this process to see what it was within us that we wanted to write. And I had no idea that it would take me to this memory of my mom unpacking and wrapping and rewrapping kimonos as a way of gratitude. And actually, this is kind of emotional for me, because I had no idea that I had lost my mother very early, like in my life, and I had not really went back to some, I had not revisited some of my emotions around her loss. And this going back to this memory of this wrapping and unwrapping would just bring me into a state that I hadn't expected to be so emotional about. What I hadn't quite faced, I hadn't quite faced the actual emotions around that loss. And in writing the book, I mean, it was just a profoundly emotional experience writing the book, but how so much of this wrapping and unwrapping was connected to this memory and my mother. And I just think that in that sense, it became a journey of exploration of this. And it became the foundation of the book, and also began to understand the Japanese culture and traditions that actually found expression through folding paper. And I think this is also something that I thought would be interesting to talk with you about, because we never really associate folding of paper with our emotions or expressions of ourselves. But there's different techniques, which is goes back to the title of the book, of also exploring creative techniques, because there are techniques of folding that actually impart meaning. And this book is also an exploration of what those techniques are. And a lot of it is rooted in history, in Japanese history and art as well. And so I introduce a little bit of that as well in the book.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So how long was that proposal writing workshop? And then did you submit your proposal? I mean, how did you get the contract with
Steve? Yes. Yeah. So this is why I feel like, you know, I think Elizabeth Gilbert sometimes talks about these different things that are beyond ourselves that make things happen creatively. But so I was writing the proposal within January, and I think a few couple of months, 4 months during that time. And then Deborah, who you and I both know is the publisher of our book, she reached out to me, I think about as I was actually finishing that proposal. So when she contacted me, I already actually have my proposal, which is just phenomenal when you think about it. And what really attracted to me, what attracted me to Deborah's proposal to me, was that she recognized the gratitude element in my wrapping. And I just, that immediately just made me feel, I just knew that this is the path I needed to take, because usually when people approach me for my wrapping, it's usually about just technique or about the aesthetic elements of things. But that Deborah came to me and said, I see that there's a gratitude element in your creative practice. And that touched my heart so much, because it's exactly how I've always connected my creative practice to gratitude. And the opportunity to explore that connection, which I already had somewhat done in the proposal making. And I said, by the way, I have actually already a proposal for me. So that process went so quickly. So right in the summer, I already had a book deal, and I was starting to write the book by the end of the year. And by that time, I really didn't want to even do techniques. I really just wanted to write the meaning so much about the, because there's so much emphasis. I mean, there's many books on techniques, but less on the meaning of the craft.
Right.
And I had mentioned to Deborah at the time, I said, you know, I do feel like story marries meaning and craft. And I think that I feel like if we can, you know, accomplish the marriage of that, then I would so much love the opportunity to do that. And I'm just so grateful that I had that. And I had that fantastic editor, Alethea Morrison, and creative. She was also the creative director on the book. And
Let me just stop you and tell you a little story about Deborah. So, listeners, Deborah Belmuth is the publisher of Storybooks now, and I met her like 30 years ago. I had a similar experience to you. However, I didn't even have a proposal. She saw a workshop that I was teaching. I was living in New York, and she Story was publishing a lot of gardening books. And she saw this compost paper making class that I was teaching on making paper with plants. And they had just started publishing a few craft books, like nature printing is one of their really popular craft books. And she sent me a letter. This was before the internet, and asked me if I would be interested in writing a book on the subject. And I was like, nope, sure. And then I had to write the proposal and all of that. So yeah, she's wonderful, and I've had her on the podcast too, listeners. We talked a little about the ins and outs of the publishing world, the craft book publishing world. So I love
I know.
that.
I think we
Yeah.
both share our love for Deborah and her ability to really, I think, see the deeper meaning
Yeah. Yeah.
of the things that we do. And
Right.
so I think that definitely, you know, led us in the direction that we did, you know, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted you to read on page 21 your little section about the gift of words. And
Yes.
you have so many wonderful stories throughout the book about the meaning of gifts. And yeah, I'd like you to define a gift as well, but let's start with the reading.
Okay. This is a part of the book that's called The Gift of Words. And I write that I often wrap note cards as I would wrap a gift, usually a simple band around the envelope, a muted color, thin string holding the band in place. I almost inevitably add a simple flower, the quiet but striking ones that grow unnoticed on the side of the road. Yugen is an important concept in Japanese aesthetics, poetically described by the 15th century monk poet Shotetsu as the quality suggested by the sight of a thin cloud veiling the moon or by the autumn mist swathing the scarlet leaves on a mountainside. That essence is how I feel about wrapping words. The wrapping becomes the veil for my thoughts, too personally and deeply felt to expose directly. Confronted by jarring texts and tweets, void of filter, no accounting for impact, I become centered and soothed when I put my sentiments to paper with slow care and thoughtfully wrap them. I remember that words matter, how we treat our words matter, and how we share them with others matters. And then I end with the Japanese proverb, one kind word can warm 3 winter months.
I love that. So I think somewhere you describe sort of the different elements of wrapping a gift and giving the gift. And so talk a little bit about that.
I do feel like this whole idea of, you know, you asked what is a gift,
Yeah.
and for me, a gift is that element that is the pricelessness of something. There is no price that you can put on that. And it's, I think that is what is the element of gift and what represents to me the wrapping of the gift, which is the intention, the thoughts, the care, and the appreciation, the gratitude. These are things that we give and receive that have really, you can't put a monetary value on it, but it's just has nurturing and values in ways that really can't be monetized in some way, you know. And I think the only way that we can honor those gifts are with gratitude and to really, and sometimes when I wrap for myself, it's something that I can't, there's nothing that I can do, really. There's no words, there's nothing I could give you, there's nothing I could really do other than to put everything I have in something that I've created. And I think that is, to me, the gift. And often when we receive a gift, and I talk about that, about receiving gifts as well in the book, but we often discard that part of it. And whether that is a gift of a compliment or a gift of someone saying we can't receive that. But I think that the Japanese way of approach of rapping has taught me that we're really dealing with the feelings of a person, you know, that person letting you know that they appreciate you or they want to thank you. And our role as receivers is to really accept that graciously and say thank you and to take that in. And to and in that way, receivers also are imparting gifts. They're in receiving, they're also giving. And that is the reciprocal exchange that I learned through through this approach of giving and rapping in Japanese culture. So I think, I don't know if I've answered your question, but for myself, like my wrapping of the words is sort of reflective of that, is that sometimes, you know, a gift could be what you appreciate about somebody. And it's a gift to you to recognize that. And for the receiver, it's a gift to say that someone has thought that about you and to feel grateful for that acceptance of that for yourself, and how wonderful of an exchange that is between a connection that it brings between people. So really, I think for me, rapping does represent the element, which is the part that you can't really put a price on, but it's the part that you want to impart and to give and to share.
You're reminding me, this is a funny story, which totally goes kind of against what you're, all these beautiful things you're saying, but my intent with a gift versus the receiver's, what the receiver got from it. I made this card for a friend. This was decades ago. And it's on the front of the card, there was a tree and it said, "Your present is under the tree." So I meant just open the card. And then there was, it was peace. And he asked me, but I think he had put it literally under a Christmas tree. It was at the holidays. And so he asked me, you know, "Where is my present?" or something, you know. And it was just the notion of peace, right?
Peace. So
yeah, maybe I should have wrapped the card more beautifully so it looked more like a gift. Yeah. It probably just was in a plain envelope, or maybe even no envelope. I'm kind of sparse in that department.
But this speaks to some fact too, though, that I think we're conditioned to look at a gift as a material gift.
Yes.
And I think that partly as well as what I, you know, in experiencing in the writing of the book, that there really also needs to be a shift in how we receive our gifts, because and to really maybe reframe the way we look at what a gift means. And I think that for my, and I'm, to be honest, for myself, it's in receiving the gifts that I have actually been taught how to give. It's just when I'm just overcome with emotion because of what someone has done for me or said something or gave me, those emotions have actually have been the inspiration for me to want to return that to not only that person, but to maybe someone else so that they can experience the things that I have. And so I think the idea of learning to receive is also a gift as well. And for me, that has been the inspiration for me to want to do what, you know, to do the gifting, is because of the emotions and things that I have been able to receive from the people who've been so generous. And
I can think of times, you know, selecting a gift for someone or wrapping it or just the whole leading up to giving it. That is a beautiful thing as well. You're thinking about that person, you're intentionally focusing, and you write about this in the book too, I want you to talk a little bit about your approach, like how the format of the book and how that came about. You said that you really wanted to focus on these thoughts behind gift giving and gratitude. And how did it come about to include actual projects? So you have actual techniques, and it's a really interesting format. The front end is really heavy on the thinking and the why. And then, but you refer to, oh, you can look on this page and find this. And then the back section is more a technique heavy. So just talk a little bit about how was that your idea? Did you work with your editor? And how did that, your proposal, was your proposal laid out that way or did it change?
Yes. Well, I wanted to address two things in the book, which was why do we wrap our gifts and why is that meaningful? How do we wrap our gifts in a way that is nurturing to ourselves and to others, as well as being conscientious of the environment? So I think the soul of gift wrapping represents a little bit of the meaning behind the gift, and then the techniques refers to how do we wrap in such a way that accomplishes those things. And so it was sort of divided in that two sense. My editor actually, and like I mentioned earlier, who I was so blessed to have to be seen and understood by your editor is probably one of the best gifts that a writer or an author can have. And she was actually helped to divide the book, suggesting that the essays come, that we put the essays on, and then we actually also have an equal amount of emphasis on the technique aspects of it. I would have probably even took away some of the techniques, but I wound up to realize that so much meaning actually is in the techniques, and how she described it to me, which was so beautiful, was that it's a dialogue that the both can have. Meaning and technique could have a dialogue. And how to make that in a book was really the skill of the editor, really to say in a book format, how can we accomplish those two things? And one of the other things that I would like people to read in the book is the instructional aspects, because I wanted the instructions to be also kind of a writing in the sense that it imparted meaning in the direction of the techniques. And one of the things that my editor, Alethea, she had done that was so wonderful is because she always was so very protective and very of what I wanted to impart and write, and wanted to make sure that we included everything. But some things were, space limitations would do. And so we broke up some of the writing to incorporate it in what she said were head notes, which I thought was wonderful because it actually made it easier for the reader to take parts of what I wrote. And we sort of took the parts instead of not having to be even put it in, we put it in a different format in the technique section also, which I thought really helped with being able to express the things that I wanted in the format that maybe the user could,
Digest
experience
it
while
easily.
and digest easier. Exactly. And so I was able to incorporate, the meaning and the techniques both. And it was really hard because the writing part was actually much more difficult because it's a new territory for me, but the technique parts was actually quite came more naturally to me. I knew exactly what I needed to do there. And what I wanted to accomplish on the technique side was the whole question of how do you wrap in such a way that's meaningful to us and others and also conscientious. So in the materials we use and how we can incorporate meaning in the foldings of different dupliques or bands or things like that and introduce that element. I wanted to make it simple so that it could, gratitude wrapping to me is something that comes spontaneously. Sometimes you don't really plan, something comes, you're grateful and you want to just maybe give a little something to someone. So I wanted it to be something easily implementable. So you needed very little tools to do. And so I wanted to keep the process fairly simple. But I also wanted to challenge myself because some of the things that I've actually come up with in terms of a wrapping with no tape method, coming up with ways to wrap that, you know, make binding easier, you know, things like that. You know, the basic fold that we standard wraps that we do with the two folds on the side of the box.
Right.
I wanted to actually reinvent that and actually make it so that you can fold that without a tape, with just paper and folds. And I just explored different Japanese wrapping folding techniques, but kind of came up with a way that you can fold a box, a standard wrapping box, by folding the two ends together. And so I actually had, you know, some creative challenges that I took on with the book, given this opportunity now that I did.
Two quick things. You talk about the standard way that we wrap a box and doing it without tape. And you mentioned the way your mother wrapped your sandwiches in wax paper. Did you say wax paper? Because my mother did that too. And there was a way that she would fold over on the back side so that, as you said, no moisture would get in. And I don't know what the origin of that fold is. I should ask my mother if her mother did that, or I don't know.
Or how they found that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. Yes.
But then you've sort of mentioned this a few times, but I want to just drive it home that your book really deals with sustainability, and that you write about tape in particular, and how you realized it's not so great for the environment. And so that was one of the reasons that you, I think, right? You kind of went in this direction of figuring out how to do things without tape.
Yeah, I know this is, and I write this in the book as well, because I love tape. And I think it's probably one of, for a person that wraps gifts, it's probably one of the most useful inventions ever created. And so for me to take on the challenge of not using tape for the entire book, I mean, nothing is, you don't have to use tape for anything in the book, was probably one of the hardest things that I've had to do, you know, for what I do in terms of wrapping gifts. But you know, over the years, as I've taught workshops, I've had many people who come to me for, you know, sustainable solutions, and have always invariably always asked me, do you have wrapping methods without tape? And I would have some. I would definitely incorporate that into something that I would teach at a workshop. But and I also was invited to Australia to because they were also having issues with waste, and they had done a big research around that and came in to ask me to provide also some ideas and solutions. And it really drove home to me that this was something important to environmentalists. And I was just learned the many aspects of how it provides sort of sorting challenges, because sometimes if you use tape and you use recycled paper, because of the tape, you know, it would just go to the landfill recycled. And so, and things like this that made me realize that I, you know, if I were going to write a book, then I could provide that. And it really challenged me to say, what can I do then to provide? And there's enough books, I think, that offer the other type of wrapping solution. But I thought I would really, provide you use this opportunity to create styles, and actually it did lead me to do things that I would never have thought of doing, provided that challenge. So you will see like different wrapping techniques that I've curated, but also have found through other wrapping techniques, and then also created some things that I have put together, and the entire book is based on different ways that you can approach it, and using different materials as well. You know, from paper to fabric to, and using repurposed materials, and also teaching that when we reuse materials, or when we repurpose a material that's not meant for wrapping, or use natural materials from nature, that, you know, that these are ways that also we are being conscious in our choice of how to go about wrapping. And hopefully, I'm really hoping though that it would offer, you know, other people. I'm looking forward to hearing what other people's solutions are. I mean, this is just really my own starting point and my way of just exploring it. And as in my workshops, the students and people who come to me always are the ones that teach me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you know, I'm sure you experience
yes.
that too. And so that is what I really am looking forward to, because opening this dialogue, I think the creators of the world will come up with so much more, and that is going to be phenomenal to see.
Yeah,
and I
so
hope that's
your
what it'll inspire.
And so your book is a huge gift to all of us, and then we get to, yeah, explore and go further with that.
Hey listeners, let's take a little break here, and I want to make sure you know about my how-to books about papermaking and papercrafts. My latest book is called The Art of Papercraft, and it offers a rich variety of projects that will delight crafters, artists, and designers alike, including paper votives, pop-up cards, folded paper gift boxes and envelopes, woven paper wall hangings, miniature one-sheet books, and much more. I also have two popular books about papermaking, Papermaking with Garden Plants and Common Weeds, and The Papermaker's Companion. All three books are available on Kindle. Now back to our conversation.
I was really struck by this story about the art of wrapping being similar to shoji screens. I want you to talk about this gift you made for your husband, because I got to go to Japan when I was like 23. My parents went. My father was working there one summer doing research physics. And my mom and I went to just tour around. And we stayed at an inn, a ryokan in Kyoto, and were surrounded by shoji screens. And that was like, that's when I said to myself, I already had an inkling about paper from college, but not really any direction I wanted to go. And so I just was mesmerized by the light filtering through those shoji screens. And that really is what I'm still entranced by today, light coming through paper. So
oh, yeah.
Tell me about your this gift that you made.
Yeah, it's well, to go back to the shoji screen, it's interesting because I was looking at actually, I was always fascinated with Japanese windows because I was staying over at a friend's house in Kyoto too. And I noticed that the windows were on the floor and it was just framing a scene of the a bonsai in the back. And it was just a framed window. And that sort of led me to looking at screens and shoji screens and how they also are designed to frame an experience for you, like to the light, as you talk about, is a way so that, you know, it the division is always not so stark, but that it could somehow
block
like,
what's on
so
the other
block
side.
What's on the other side in order for you to bring attention to something that's what was meant to be seen. And so when I was looking at why people wrap and the history of wrapping and things, I came upon this article that talked about wrapping as a way to frame an object. And so that automatically made me think of this experience of an onsen experience where I had opened up a shoji screen window and beautiful cherry blossoms just like fluttered like in front of the scene, and how that sort of framed my experience of that moment. And it was a way to tell me to pay attention to that moment. And so that analogy sort of came to me in my writing, that I wanted to sort of somehow explore this connection. And but my husband's gift for the 25th anniversary was not really in relation to this.
Okay.
Only in reflection, it was because
Okay.
I really wanted to do something special for my husband and I. We really don't give gifts for birthdays necessarily because, you know, what we do, we just gift each other, you know, experiences and different things like that. But for this anniversary, I kind of wanted to do something very, something that marked the occasion. And actually, the 25, I write about wrapping 25 memories, experiences that I wanted to reflect on of our 25 years. And I would wrap it and I put it in a repurposed hardware nail because he's always someone that, you know, fixes things around our house. And actually, I kind of thought about it as an Advent gift because my I always used to do Advents for my children. I thought, oh, this year I will wrap each gift for him. It was 25 years of in 25, you know. So I thought I would do it for them. So it wound up to be kind of, you know, leading to that. But I wound up wrapping each specific memory. But it just also in reflection of that memory and connecting to the framing of an object, it just reminded me how that moment in wrapping those memories just allowed me to pause and reflect and gave me a moment to actually just kind of appreciate things for that moment that, you know, in our busy lives, we never get to notice. And I think that there's this line that I love that I write in the book, which I think in the end I wrote, right, wrapping helped me to pause and linger, focusing my thoughts on the joyful aspects of 25 years of marriage and raising three children. Cut off from view was everything distracting, the lack of time, feelings of stress, endless to-do lists that prevent us from appreciating all the good things that are in front of us, and how lovely it was to be redirected, even for a fleeting moment, to the metaphorical view of snow falling on the ground. And I think that was sort of the idea of that is how we don't take time to look at these very simple things that are so beautiful and are blessings in our lives, but we don't take the time to look and appreciate them. And I think what wrapping has taught me to do or why it's valuable to me in a sense is that it creates that moment for me, that fleeting moment, that second to just ponder that for a moment, to be in a place where I'm in a space of gratitude. I'm in a space of being able to reflect on something that was joyful. That in itself to me is a gift that you realize that, you know, that you come to realize the beauty of something. I think maybe that's what I wanted to share.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you mentioned, well, I want to just roll in this. I think there are snow shoji screens, and you talked at the beginning of this little segment that we're talking about right now about the shoji screens being on the floor, or and so this is these papered screens so that you're not looking right at the ground when you're looking out. You're looking, it's an intentional framing, just what you described.
Yes, I was
in Japan the last time I visited a woman, and she lived in her grandmother's house, and she pointed out the snow shoji, and I didn't quite make the connection because it was summer, you know, whatever. It just, but so it was fun to discover that in your book. It's fun how those little tidbits.
Let me just because for your listeners that don't know what the snow screen is. So yukimi shoji is actually a term of snow viewing window, which yukimi shoji, which is literally snow viewing window. And it's actually a term that is referring to the shoji screen, but the actual, you know, focal point of attention doesn't have to be necessarily snow falling on the ground. It could refer to, like I said, fall leaves, it could
cherry
be
blossom.
More like cherry blossoms. It could be whatever the focal point is, but it's designed to bring your mind's attention to a specific scene of nature. And so the shoji screen, the yukimi shoji, if you go to Japan, you can ask if your inn has a yukimi shoji, because sometimes the inns that do usually have a view, usually have something that the shoji screen will, you know, you'll be able to experience seeing something that's intentionally designed for you to experience. I love that idea that it's a design concept, but it's also, you know, it's actually something that's used as a description of something.
Yeah.
But I sort of wanted to go into the deeper meaning of that. Aside from that, also, I feel like it's this way of like, you know, there's so much noise in our world and there's so much that we need to process, but it almost is like, it almost gives you sort of a way to just to kind of close yourself off from that for just a small moment, as just a little time for you to just be in another state of mind and consciousness. And so Yukimi Shoji for me represents that. It just represents the idea that we can direct our attention to something that's a blessing, that's beautiful for just a short moment, and how wonderful it is to just be able to experience that one fleeting moment. And that sometimes helps to sustain us. There's just so much right now to have to deal with and process and do. So the exploration of that connection to me is somewhat profound. You know, the idea that the framing of something to allow us to see something specific for a short time, you know.
Yeah, thank you. I love how you have these little sort of history moments, you know, in the book, or not history, but I don't know, you know, like the Yukimi Shoji, had no idea. And another, you talk a little bit about a brief history of origami, and some of your projects incorporate origami techniques. And I think you worked with Ruth Asawa. You have to tell me, because she's like a huge person in the art and craft world. Listeners, look her up if you don't know her. I know a lot of you do. So tell me about that.
Yeah, no, I really can't express in words just my feelings for Ruth, because my connection and my love for her are on different levels. I think in reference to the book, though, I know she has these, she obviously sort of takes origami, which she loves, and she was actually the one that sat down with me and introduced me to origami. While I introduce origami, and you are a wonderful paper crafter, you know, in the level of folding that's kind of beyond my scope. I really deal with it in the very basic level. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just so complicated. You know, sometimes it feels complicated. And I like to break it down to pieces that I can remember and that I can apply. And in the world of wrapping, it's actually been very useful. But what Ruth had done is was really kind of make it so accessible to me. And what I was always inspired by of her is her ability to scale up the origami. She's made sculptures from origami concepts and designs. And you will see like one of her fountains in, you know, San Francisco's Japantown that reflects, you know, you know, taking or a concept like that. And of course, magnifying it, which is what I sort of applied in my book with wrapping. But my connection to Ruth, to me, I always admired her for one, that she always did things in community and always involved the community. And the other was really for me personally as an artist, to basically acknowledge. There's a quote in the book how she says that an artist is really an ordinary person that can take ordinary things and make them special. And I think she's always made art accessible to people, and that she allowed in her presence and in just how she connected with you and talked to you and engaged with you in art, it was always accessible, and it was always something that that you felt was something that you could also have within yourself. And I think it's probably something that I will always feel like I would like to impart. And even in my small way, my rapping classes, people might say to me, you know, I'm not really creative and I don't know how to do this or things like that. And I have to say that I could say that about myself, but I think inspired by Ruth, and also how what I'd like to pass on forward is that we're all artists. It's just that we need to tap into that part of ourselves, and art to me is such an expression. There's no value to art in the sense of, you know, what's right or wrong, and you know, expression is just a form of expression, and we should take that in and receive it as a gift in itself. And so for me, Ruth was sort of the embodiment of that. And
did
as
you,
far as
did,
my
you just have to tell me, did you take classes with her? Were you a
Oh,
child?
okay.
Like,
So
set the frame. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry. I tend to digress a lot. I had an amazing experience at working on a project with Robert Rauschenberg, actually. And he, of course, was connected to the project, connected me to a number of people, of course. And one of them, a project was a tribute to the 21st century. And in connection to that, Jacques Dambois, who's the National Dance Institute instructor, was one of the honorees during that time, and we had connected. And he, of course, was coming into San Francisco, and had been. We were all invited to her house for dinner, and that's just kind of how we sort of began to connect. And at that time, she had given us a just and as a result, like we had did a design project. She designed a plate for us in tribute to the various cultural organizations that the project was supporting. And then we were also, she was, of course, a big part of the School of the Arts. And she was really advocating for artists to come to the school to teach in the classrooms. And so we worked together on, we were beginning at that time to work on ways that we can encourage more artists to come to the school at the time. And then, of course, she came to my children's elementary school and, you know, and taught the origami part. You know, she just was a huge, we just had connections in different ways, but I can't really express, you know, in words, just in the ways that she has been such a big influence, and also just her as a person was extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, I love what she said and what you echoed about artists being ordinary people, because I think, yeah, sometimes people just say to me, oh, I don't have any talent, you know, or, and that's just, I just believe art is in everyone, it's creativity. And I had to learn, I had to practice, and we all have to go in our particular direction and master our skills. And just to, sometimes we get written off, and those are disconnect. And how wonderful that she went into the schools and worked with children. I didn't know that. We're going to have to wrap up here. So I want to just quickly go through, you know, you have a great section in the book on materials. We talked a little bit about that. It's not just paper. You use other kinds of materials for wrapping. I did want to touch on your gratitude bows. And you told me before we hopped on about a beautiful project. Maybe you could just tell that again about the different papers people used for this particular bow project or bow.
Oh,
remember? Yeah.
Yes. The gratitude bow was, I created a template for a bow that would be a sustainable version of the gift bow, and
instead of ribbon,
instead of ribbon, the idea I was to use the different kinds of papers to make them, and so it was fun playing around with, you know, using maps and using magazines and using anything that I could find to make these bows. And actually, it became an exhibition at one point of those bows. But the most meaningful experience I've had with the bows was working with the students from the Tohoku region, which was devastated by the tsunami back in 2011. And I have been part of a wonderful program. It was a Tomodachi SoftBank leadership program connected to Y Plan. I was an instructor for this youth civic engagement program that helps young people engage in action plans and civic activities that revitalize their communities. And as part of an instructor, I incorporate an element of art into it. And the bows was a way that I wanted to involve the students to write down their aspirations for their communities, how they wanted to rebuild them once they went back. And what was so profound about what they all wrote and reflected on is that the things that they were very much grateful for having and now having lost was what they wanted to incorporate in what they wanted again for their communities. And seeing all of the students' visions and ideas and hopes and dreams for that the revitalized community that they saw for themselves on these bows and displayed, you know, hundreds of them displayed together was so incredibly powerful. And to see the words on those strips of paper, and then to have had the reflections of them all incorporated that, and then to have them displayed was just such a transformative experience for me to witness, and I hope for the students as well, to see the impact that would have. And I would love to see, to go back and see some of that implemented and come to life for them and their communities. And so as a result, I sort of named it, I just gave it the name myself as the Gratitude Bow, because it reflected gratitude on so many levels, and the student inspired the idea of gratitude. And I think it's once you lose things, I think it's in the loss of things that you really come to reflect on the things that really meant something to you and that are valuable. And I think to the degree that we can recognize those things in our lives in the moment is what defines the richness of our experiences. And I think the students were the greatest teacher of that. And I'm grateful for that, for them.
So this is one of the projects in the book, and I do a lot of work. My art installations involve community, and another aspect is just realizing you're not alone when you do something in a group like that. You hear somebody else's wish, and then you're like, oh yeah, well, you realize something about them, or you realize, oh, I have that same wish. So it's very powerful. Cool.
I'm sorry. No, I just wanted to say, you know, talking about a gift of that you talk about the sharing and in community. And I think part of a gift is, and the wrapping of the gift is what makes it very powerful, is in the exchange and the sharing. Yes. And so I think that's really what you're talking about, was is the gift is really a interconnective thing. It's something that's dynamic through the exchange and through the giving and the receiving, both. It's the interchange of that. And I think that's what I wanted to, I just thought of that when you said.
There's so many layers. I know you have, I just want to talk about your cupcake liner flower, because I think that's such a clever. So you are, you know, people don't have to go out and buy a lot of things to make the projects in the book. You can just, if you make cupcakes or muffins, you probably have those little paper liners. Tell me how that came about.
Yeah, and I think you'd have to see the book to see what I'm talking about. But actually, it was just the design of that bow is actually something of anything round, and so my girlfriend actually uses like those round coffee filters, but I use but I basically at the moment that I was making the filters, I mean the cupcake liners, I just happened to be looking at a flower, the chrysanthemum, which actually turns out I think it was more of a dahlia now, but I was looking at a flower and I was wanting to mimic. I was just struck by the beauty of a single flower, and I just wanted somehow artistically to. I was just sitting there waiting for it to be done in the oven, and I thought I wanted to kind of just mimic the intricacies of that flower, and I just happened to have the liners, and I was just cutting them up into different pieces, and just to give that. I wanted to cut in such a way that really looked at the each petal was the dynamics of each petal. So I took the liners is just there, but it wound up to be something that I wound up using a lot of. And also the liners were the using up, speaking of repurposing, you know how the liners have those white liners in between the cupcakes, I was just repurposing those because I was going to throw them out. And so those were kind of what was in front of me at that time. And so, but what I think I drive home in the book, hopefully, is that there's so many materials around you. I love packaging material. They're just honeycomb, honey. I talk about that. Packaging materials are beautiful if you really look at them, and you can, fold them or crumple them or do different things with the paper to create a different effect. And it actually, it's in the engagement of that that makes it so beautiful in the end. Like you can create something else from it. And to open yourself up to those ideas, to look at your materials. I think I have a Dr. Seuss quote. It's like, it's not what it is, it's what it can become. And there's so much in that is that in our, through what we do with it, it could become something else. And that's a repurposing quote as well for myself, is that it gives me the sense that I can also, depending on how you look at yourself or you could become something else as well, or someone else can be. There's so much potential to us other than what we're are assigned roles. There's I think that kind of drives home this idea that through our materials we can see that depending on how we see it, it could change. And using a different material for wrapping is sort of comes from, that inspiration.
And you mentioned folding, crumpling, you have pleating, tearing, different kinds of bands. So lots of different ideas for wrapping with paper and other materials. Let's talk, just give me two recommendations. Since you mentioned that honeycomb packing material, we were talking earlier before this about going to resale shops. Tell me a little bit about what you find in a resale shop.
Oh yeah, so I mean, I really encourage people to go to reuse centers, and they are. I usually try to stop by when I go to places. I like to see the reuse centers, but they are there that are they actually have things that normally might go to the landfill, but are there usually for artists or teachers to use as materials to teach in their art classes. Scrap in San Francisco is one, and I think I'll just there's a couple in, there's a scrap I think in Portland as well. And when I was in Australia, I went to one that's called Reverse Garbage, and it's they have materials there that normally people might throw away. But what I love about it is that I find these papers that are old accounting ledgers or they're graphically interesting or architectural renderings that people are just going to throw away, or just papers that came out like old book pages that came out from in the 1930s or something, and these papers are just kind of ready to go to the landfill, but it's just a stop before that, and we can really reclaim them and create something new from them. And for myself, I love to be able to pick through them to find these really interesting paper materials and reuse them for just wrapping or for art in general. And I just really encourage that treasure hunt for
it is a
people to
treasure hunt.
find. Yes. So I hope that we can maybe even list a few of the places to be able to go to. I'm just grateful that I've been able to experience the joy of that. My husband says he feels so lucky that this is he says he feels so generous to be able to sometimes come on like, you should take anything you want here.
And you had a tool you showed me, which is a paper cutter.
Yes.
Describe that, and we'll put a link in the show notes.
This is actually a paper cutter that is from Scotch, and I love it because it has a blade that's internal, and it makes a straight cut. And I, ironically, because I've had to travel sometimes for myself, and I can't have scissors, it's been really wonderful to have in my toolkit, because it has a covered blade, and then it also makes straight cuts of paper. So this is something that is nice to have, and as you mentioned, I think most people might not know about, and I kind of have a few of these that.
Yeah, just to describe it a little more, it looks just like a pen almost. It's just the shape of a pen, but I've seen paper suppliers that have big rolls of craft paper that they're wrapping the paper that you purchase in, just using something like this to zip across and cut a piece of paper from the roll. So maybe is it used in wrapping for cutting wrapping paper?
Yes. Used in wrapping. It's used for wrapping paper, but it works. It works mostly on not so much. I notice it's not as great on washi paper, but it works great on straight paper.
Yeah,
it will catch because they have the two. They have the fibers in there.
Right.
But for straight cut papers like craft paper or any kind of like printing paper, it works really well, or wrapping paper. Speaking of paper materials, craft paper is so wonderful because it's very eco-friendly, and it's also, depending on how you can manipulate the paper, you can actually, depending on how you fold it or crumple it, or there's so many different things you can do to make it interesting. You can actually write on it, do art on it, and there's different ways that you can utilize sort of something I recommend.
You have even a lot of the photos in the book I noticed were taken with craft paper, sort of the step by step. It's beautiful.
Yes.
So let's summarize, or let's you have a beautiful ending. I just wanted reflection at the end about your mother that is so touching in the book. And what do you want to read a little bit, or just
yes. I think that so let me yes, my ending of the book is really a reflection. Again, like I mentioned, I think so much of my book is talking about reflection and memories of my mother. And one of the things that I really, one of my greatest wishes that I wish she got to meet my children. I know my kids just recently got married, and it just reflected because my mother passed away right before my wedding, wasn't able to see that, and it just made me reflect on the many and I think I really just reflect on how special it is, a mother's presence, I guess. So here's a thing in my ending. So my path to gratefulness, to honoring life's gifts, to honoring my mother and the tradition of her Japanese cultural heritage led me to discover the art of wrapping and its hidden meanings. Wrapping our gifts is not the only or even necessary way to practice gratitude. As the poet Rumi wrote, there are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. but I'm actually drawn to his words in the previous line of the same poem, "Let the beauty we love be what we do." Through writing this book, I've come to experience the soul and spirit of rapping in its truest and rawest form as a reminder of what makes life meaningful. Through intentional effort and creativity, you can manifest and translate your deepest feelings of gratitude in physical form and share it with the world as a gift. It's a poetic response to the many unrepayable, often unrecognized gifts we are given, such as our body's breath or the extraordinary gift of nature. I hope it will help you to see your life as a blessing. This is the gift I want to leave behind. Is there someone or an experience you feel grateful for today? I encourage you to wrap your thoughts with your own hands, guided by your inner intuition, and give thanks. Let it be known in a way that best expresses your intention. Make the activation of your gratitude a regular practice. It is nurturing, giving, and energizing, bringing immediate joy to yourself and others, inspiring a natural circulation and reciprocation of positive energy. In the words of poet Maya Angelou, the intangible but very psychic force of good in the world is increased. So I think that the message that maybe I will leave with, because, and I leave with the book, but
it's beautiful and it's poignant also that today, the release date for this, we're recording this in April, but it's coming out on Mother's Day. That just serendipity.
Yes, no, it's so meaningful that it does come out on Mother's Day for the very reason this book is dedicated to my mother. And so I wish everybody a happy Mother's Day to the mothers and mother figures in your life. Please give thanks to the presence that they bring into your lives and wrap a gift for them.
Yeah, this has been wonderful. And Megumi, we can find you online at giftwrapbymegumi.com, and you're on Instagram posting about the book at giftwrapbymegumi. And yes. Where can people buy the book? Everywhere, right?
Everywhere, anywhere books are sold. Yeah. You know, it's nice to support your local bookstores. I think there's such, I love having, I just look forward to finding my book at a bookstore somewhere and seeing it.
Yeah, that's super fun. And do you have any events that you're doing around the launch of the book?
Yeah, there's several of it. I think you're saying this is in May. So I think I'll probably post the summer schedule on my website or Instagram. I have several that have, you know, reached out to me to do. I think one thing great about this book is that there's essays and meanings to share, but also there's the demonstrations and teachings of the various rapping techniques. And I think that draws in a lot of people to want to learn some of those techniques. So, and I'm excited to do that. I'm really, that this is a part of it I'm really looking forward to, is it just engaging with people and hearing their stories of rapping with gratitude and who in their lives that have a lot of meaning to them. These are kind of things that I have really thought about and have thought, oh, this is really why I wanted to write the book, was to be able to hear these stories and share them and hopefully like it's an inspiring thing mutually for us. So
Well, thank you for sharing your gift with us on Paper Talk.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so honored to be here with you, and you've been certainly an inspiration to me.
Hey, paper friends, did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Redcliffe Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit HelenHebertStudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.